I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE in a region where Epstein wars are far from over, even if Israeli asset Lindsey Graham is dead. This week's appearance of Netanyahu and Zelensky in Washington for the funeral tied up two emblematic imperial wars. Of course, there has been this week's continuing UK-US-EU armed genocides in Gaza and Lebanon and the NATO killing of civilians in Russia, but Trump's war on Iran has widened to Saudi strikes on Iraq. This, as Ukraine's neo-Nazis have attacked Iranian interests, even as Iran has attacked a key US base in Jordan, and Iraq now claims to have broken a Ukraine false flag attack plan here in West Asia. The only consolation today for Trump is today's meeting in Caracas to apparently formalize victory over Venezuela after kidnapping President Maduro. Because Trump has exhausted the US military, and the world now stares into the abyss of an economic depression after the end of free trade through Hormuz and Bab al-Mandeb. Joining me now from Chattanooga in Tennessee is President Trump's former lawyer, founder of Barnes Law, and co-host of Viva and Barnes Law for the People podcast, Robert Barnes. Robert, thanks so much for coming on Going Underground. Keen fans of the podcast. By the time this is broadcast, we don't know whether Trump has beat the f***ing shit out of Iran, as he said to Rupert Murdoch's Fox News. On the other hand, before we get into the geopolitics, something rather optimistic about the United States, arguably, as regards Fauci, this man involved with COVID, which killed tens of millions of people, billions of people affected by it. Wasn't it a great thing to see how the United States can put someone like that on the stand, even if justice hasn't been done yet?
Yeah, I mean, thanks to Senator Rand Paul, Health Secretary Robert Kennedy, and Senator Ron Johnson that they managed to put Fauci in the limelight where he's always wanted to be, but not in the way he wanted to be. And so, I mean, you're talking about someone who now the evidence, as Tulsi Gabbard, former director of national intelligence, disclosed several months ago, Fauci was running a bioweapons lab operation around the globe, including in China, including in Ukraine, over 100 different facilities around the world to basically experiment on potential biological weapons under the guise they were biodefense tools, and in the process caused the leak of COVID-19, then covered up the fact that it was his bioweapons that created COVID-19, and then used it as a pretext to engage in a mass Milgram experiment on the world in terms of lockdowns, in terms of depriving people of their core fundamental freedoms, whether they're recognized under various UN conventions or the United States Constitution, as may be applicable in the various circumstances. And so you're talking about a guy who did more damage. The only person that could probably compete with Lindsey Graham for causing murder and mayhem around the world, for causing mass death around the world, is Anthony Fauci.
Will he go to jail? Will he go to? I mean, Trump gave him an award, I have to say, about his response to COVID. That's been forgotten. Will he go to jail?
That's now yet to be determined. It was a good question, but it was good by Senator Paul to commission to subpoena him for his testimony. And the question became, would he try to claim the Fifth Amendment? Would he answer but lie, or would he confess? That was his choices: confession, plead the fifth, or perjury. And I thought his ego was too big, and you could see him just sort of squirming at all the attacks that he couldn't feel he could respond to based on his legal counsel. He took the fifth. Now, the problem he has is that President Biden gave him an extraordinary and expansive pardon. So because of that, he has no federal criminal exposure that could justify the assertion of the fifth. You have to have a reasonable basis to believe the information you're going to give can be an element in the supply chain against a future criminal prosecution. That criminal prosecution has to be plausible, can't be hypothetical, can't be imaginative, can't be speculative. It has to be something within the statute of limitations that somebody could prosecute you for how you answer that question. He didn't answer any questions. So there's always that issue when you don't answer any questions. There's a claim that's a bad faith assertion of the fifth. But the way this can get litigated is they can refer him for contempt to the Justice Department. And we'll see if Trump's Justice Department prosecutes him. There's going to be a lot of pressure on him to do so. My guess is he's trying to claim the fifth on one of two grounds. Either that he committed a bunch of crimes that violate state law in the United States, because that's the only area he was not pardoned for, because he couldn't be pardoned for it. It's going to be hard for him to plausibly explain what state crimes he committed when he was doing everything
at a federal... in Washington. I mean, I do want to get to the geopolitics, but I get an impression there from a legal mind about how important this is, of course, for the whole world. But it gets me thinking that if there may be justice as regards him, why it is that Trump has never got to... the root of the Russia hoaxes. He's been in office now for quite some time. He seems to have forgotten that all those Democrats wanted him in prison, wanted him basically in prison, and faked that he was a Russian agent. CIA's John Brennan, FBI's Comey. There was some news about Comey this week that Trump wanted to look at some of the documents. The director of National Intelligence, Clapper, Andrew McCabe, Peter Schiff, Christopher Steele, the ex-MI6 man, Hillary Clinton. Why are none of these people in jail? Or nothing seems to have happened to them at all for accusing him of being a Russian agent.
Yeah, Fauci was the keystone of a lot of accountability that a lot of Trump 2024 voters wanted to see. They still may be able to prosecute him for contempt, and we'll see. By the way, one of his defenses may be that Biden's pardons are not credible because he didn't personally sign them, and that's why he's got criminal exposure. It'd be a very peculiar defense for him to raise, but you can't rule that out. But that's just on the COVID accountability side, where there's been too little accountability, only one or two indictments brought over this extraordinary scandal that was also utilized to undermine the president's first term. But to your point, you have the J6 cases, you have the lawfare cases, you have the censorship cases, you have the Russiagate cases, you have all of these other cases where accountability was expected and demanded by a lot of his Trump 2024 voters, where there's been very, very little. A small prosecution here over Comey, but that doesn't tie into the Russiagate conspiracy. Purportedly, the Southern District of Florida is engaged in an extensive grand jury investigation, and it's going to bring, and then what would-be Attorney General Todd Blanche has promised President Trump in exchange for becoming the nominee for attorney general is that he will, in fact, bring those Russiagate prosecutions. But behind the scenes, in order to get confirmed in the Senate, Blanche is telling people he will, as soon as he's confirmed, he will completely sandbag those prosecutions. So if Blanche is not confirmed, then we probably will see Russiagate prosecutions out of the Southern District of Florida over Brennan and Clapper and Comey and crew. But if Blanche is confirmed, ironically, probably it will be another rug pull for Trump, and he will get no prosecutions, no accountability of anybody, not the Epstein files that he ended up facilitating the cover-up of, not Fauci and COVID, not what happened J6 and the lawfare and the censorship, but not even with Russiagate, which was his primary objective in 2020 and getting elected. He said he was going to get payback to all those people. Looks like he'll get payback on none of them.
And that's procedural. It's not that he's frightened of taking on this huge... pro-Ukraine lobby? What do we call it? Anti-Russian lobby? It's just procedural.
It's the deep state, effectively. They could prosecute them. There are statute of limitations issues because they didn't prosecute them as soon as they needed to, but there's still conspiracy charges they could bring, and Blanche has promised he will bring them. But I suspect Blanche, in order that the Senate, as you saw with their vote to have, you know, mass sanctions on everybody in the world connected to Russia or Iran, that they're still locked into that mindset. And I think Blanche cares more about his power than principle, and he will likely even rug pull the president, and we may see no prosecutions. I'm still hopeful that somebody sees some sort of justice for the disaster and debacle that was Russiagate. But historically and traditionally, the deep state doesn't face meaningful consequences here in America.
Well, which leads me to ask you about whether he is genuinely fearful of the Israel lobby as regards the war in this region. I mean, what do you mean? What do you think, that the Israel lobby is stronger than the deep state, as you call it, the CIA, the FBI, the Supreme Court? The Israel lobby is stronger than all of the deep state put together?
The deep state is deeply intertwined with the Israel lobby. And that's a great success of the Israel lobby in the United States, was to sort of marry it. Practically, now they're trying to marry it legally with various bills through the House and the Senate. But practically, they have merged into the deep state, going back really since the 1980s. But it's gotten worse over the last quarter century or so. And so at key levels, you take, for example, the dispute within the Pentagon. General Kane knows we don't have the munitions and the defensive interceptors to continue the conflict in Iran. Yet Admiral Cooper is deeply aligned with both the deep state and the Israel lobby. He's more eager to go in, even though we'll exhaust all our weapons in the process and be unable to
defend. In fairness, the NDAA means that the U.S. military is Israeli. I mean, exactly. it's been formalized now.
Precisely. And so they're trying to formalize and institutionalize what has always been there behind the scenes for the last quarter century. And they're so in bed together that that's why no president since Reagan has stood up to the Israel lobby. It took Reagan in 83. The advice that's been given to the president is follow Reagan. What did Reagan do when we got stuck in the Middle East? He pulled out and he told Israel to stand down. That's what the president should do. Get out and tell Israel to stand down. And that's what Vice President Vance was encouraging him to do. Undersecretary of Defense Elbridge Colby was encouraging him to do. But it was supposed to happen. And instead, it looks like Trump capitulated again to Bibi's pressure rather than pushing back. And so he's trapped in this escalation trap in Iran, just like he's trapped in this ongoing backing Ukraine, which is just nuts. And he's trapped in escalating now against China, because the economic war they're calling an economic war against Iran and Russia is really an economic war against China. And you got the Germans talking about how Europe is going to coordinate with a trade war against China. The idea that you would get together and say, let's go after the Russian bear, the Persian tiger, and the Chinese panda all at the same time, three of the greatest, longest standing civilizations in human history, gives you an idea of the hubris that dominates not only Europe, but also the Israel lobby, the American deep state, and the neocon, neoliberal establishment in Washington.
Do you think General Kane, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, will resign? He didn't resign after the vote in Congress to merge his military with Netanyahu's.
He's not known. He's kind of like the lion from The Wizard of Oz. He's not known for his courage. So, you know, he might look like he has the position of it, the nomenclature of it. But the only person that has been verbal and vocal in every single meeting has been Vance to push back. Everyone else has he's got them to step up. And the reason is Iran clearly now has live satellite intelligence, live feeds of our bases. And consequently, that makes us very vulnerable and susceptible. And there's not much we can do because we don't have the interceptors. And it's not clear the interceptors even work against the advanced ballistic missiles that Iran now has, particularly incorporating various Chinese technology in that weaponry. So you aggregate those aspects, then we're sitting ducks. I mean, that's what Iran proved just the other day. So the consequence is, Kane knows we need to get out. He knows that this will be a humiliating debacle from the military perspective because we don't have either the defensive or offensive weapons to wage a long-distance war with Iran. We don't have the means to go fly we don't have confidence that we truly have air control over Iran because, F-35s have been hit with their defensive, their air defenses. And then we had another, famously go down and we had to go in and rescue him. So Trump doesn't want a 1980s style, 1979 style Iran hostage crisis on his hand. So given all of those things, all of the military reasons say pull out, all the economic reasons say pull out, domestically, politically, he's badly underwater and bleeding out and coming into the midterms the longer he stays in this conflict. But with Trump's current state of mind, you never know. And that's the gamble that basically we have King Lear in the White House. And with King Lear in the White House, it can vary from 1 hour to the next, 24 hours to the next, 1 minute to the next, because you never know what Trump's going to do.
Robert Barnes, I'll stop you there. More from Donald Trump's former lawyer and the co-host of Viva and Barnes Law for the People after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with Donald Trump's former lawyer, the founder of Barnes Law, Robert Barnes. Robert, you were talking about King Lear and Donald Trump. I'll get to King Lear's daughter, Ivanka Trump, in a moment. But before that, you were also talking about J.D. Vance. Your understanding that Donald Trump tried to fire the vice president, J.D. Vance?
He was actually asking people that question. They give you a sense of his state of mind. This was about in April and May, after everything that Vance had said would happened. In Iran, and that everything Trump pretended was going to happen didn't happen. And the first reaction of Trump was not, hey, I should have listened to him. It was how annoyed he was that Vance was right and Trump was wrong. And then when he went to China, he was like, look at how everybody's deferential to Xi. That's the way Vance should be. And he goes, is there a way? And this was back in April, May, and early June. Then at that point, he would actually ask people, why can't I fire the vice president? Because he's become power mad. as the book Regime Change details, he wants to be Napoleon. He gave a list of figures he wants to be compared to. He wants Trump not to be compared to U.S. presidents, but to the most famous leaders in the history of mankind. And the problem is the leaders he chose weren't people like Martin Luther King or Gandhi or people that were known for peace, but instead it was all people known for war and empire and expansions, like Genghis Khan, Attila the Hun. They even put Hitler on that list, which is a little odd. So he doesn't see himself as having any peer amongst prior presidents, nor any peer amongst contemporary leaders, and he wants to be treated that way by Vance. And Vance doesn't treat him that way. Vance gives him honest feedback, which has been strongly opposed to this entire Iranian war all the way through. Tried to get him out the first time, and Trump kept rug pulling every deal Vance got done, such that the Iranians no longer have any confidence at all that Trump can get anything done, just like the Russians have no confidence at all that Trump can get anything done, because anytime Vance gets a deal done, Trump rug pulls. But so Vance has tried, he's very young. He's only been in politics for 4 years. You know, he ran for the Senate in 2022. Before then, he was not very involved in public affairs. Wrote a prominent book that became a movie, Hillbilly Elegy, etc. And he comes from Appalachia, part of the country that I'm from, that has a long history of skepticism of foreign wars and the like. But he's been very assertive. He's the only one restraining Trump at all, because everybody else, he has a cabinet of cowards and sycophants around him that are afraid to challenge him, afraid to question him, afraid to contest what he does. It took Vance, you know, twisting arms to get Kane to be more blunt about the lack of weapons that we have defensively and offensively to continue to fight a kinetic conflict with Iran on any level, on the same basis we did in the first 38 days. So, but yeah, it shows you where Trump's mind is, that the only rational, sane person in the room is the one he would like to fire if he could. Constitutionally, he can't.
Well, he did offer him a tic-tac at Lindsey Graham's funeral, it appeared to look like. Actually, on that, I do want to get to Ukraine in a moment, but Ari Ben-Menashe, the former Israeli intelligence officer, said on this program that Trump was being blackmailed through the Epstein files by Israel. What do you think of that allegation?
I've always been skeptical of that, because if you look at it, Trump's lost his mind across the board. It's not just limited. I mean, he's lost his mind in terms of backing Zelensky in Ukraine when he said he would end the war in 24 hours. He's lost his mind at how he's gone about the trade war, not using Congress, not using, you know, ways you could develop a meaningful industrial policy, but making it just a smash and grab power grab. The Venezuela doesn't have much to do with the Israel lobby. So I get why people are like, why is there this sudden reversal of Trump? It happens on both Iran and it happens on the Epstein files. The common connection between those two is the Israel lobby, but Trump is just more broadly perceives himself as a next Napoleon. And in that, he's had a massive personality shift in his second term, and he's had diminished decision-making capability. And he confabulates all the time now, convinces himself of things that aren't true, convinces himself of things that that he knows otherwise, and yet goes along otherwise. I mean, it's incredible. He really did tell Vance and everybody the strait would never be closed. Iran would never hit the Gulf. Iran's weapons would collapse overnight. They wouldn't have any missiles and drones in a week. I mean, stuff that everybody around him told him was not true. He still went through with it. He still insisted on it. So I get the explanation of people thinking there must be some sort of connection or tie between he and the Epstein files, but that doesn't explain all of his other conduct. It doesn't explain why he's completely changed his entire decision-making process. It doesn't explain why he's hostile with Russia and doing things like Venezuela and Cuba and wants to grab Greenland and all the rest. In isolation, that could be an adequate explanation, but in broader context, it really isn't. So I think it's not that Israel has anything on him. Trump sees Israel as a tool for him to become the conqueror of the world, Emperor Trump, God Emperor Trump, which used to be a meme. He's really become obsessed with that. And if you want to present information to him, you have to filter it in that way, that how your recommended policy will make him feel like a God Emperor. Otherwise, you get nowhere with him. And that's been the big problem, not blackmail.
Which means whatever happens with Pickaxe Mountain, so-called, in Iran, there is the likelihood of increased war on Russia through Ukraine. He could pivot to that. Your media, like the media in my home country of Britain, uniform in their belief. All the journalists, all the editors, all the writers believe that Zelensky is somehow winning. What do you think of how the war is being covered in your country and the wider NATO nation societal illusions about the Ukraine conflict?
You see the neoliberals and neocons. The neocons pretend that the Iranian public hates their government and is just about to overthrow it and all the rest, when all of the actual public opinion data, including from the University of Maryland in the United States, is that the Iranian public doesn't want diplomatic resolution, wants more kinetic conflict, wants revenge for what's taken place. They're more hardline than their leaders often are. And similarly in Russia, Putin isn't the one that's the most hardline in his country. It's the population that is much more hardline, demanding more aggressive action, which it looks like Russia will now begin to take. Both the West has consistently misinterpreted the prior Iranian regime's efforts at diplomacy as weakness. Trump, told this to the regime change people, that the fact that Iran didn't fight back more in the summer of 2025 and didn't fight back before against Israel's attacks in the fall of 2024 meant he called them a paper tiger. The same thing has been true in the West. They've interpreted Putin's self-restraint as a sign of weakness, when it was always a sign of just not wanting to escalate the conflict, not wanting to minimize the amount of civilian harm. And as the gloves come off, Russia is going to, as Otto von Bismarck famously said, they're slow to saddle up, but when they ride fast. And that's where Russia is going. And that's where everybody in the West is going to be shocked as how quickly the Donbass falls, what could have been, Ukraine could have kept Odessa, Kyiv, Kharkiv, large parts of the, under the deal that Trump promised in August in Anchorage last year. But Trump actually saw Putin's willingness to do that deal as weakness, rather than this was the last exit ramp for the West to avoid Ukraine just becoming a rump state. That's what's going to happen there. But I debated Vice President Vance on this. I told him that, an autist on Telegram knew more about the war than what the CIA was feeding him. It's the old mushroom strategy. Keep him in the dark and feed him shit. That's what was happening to Trump in the White House. Vance acknowledged that was an issue, started to get better diverse sources of information. He knows Russia is winning the war. He knows Russia will win the war. And he made efforts to try to get the Anchorage deal through, but Trump rug pulled it all the way through because he wants Putin to bow to him. He wants Xi to bow to him. He wants the Ayatollah to bow to him. He wants the statues in Caracas and Tehran to be to him, not to anyone else. Just like the 50-foot gold statue he's actually building of himself in his library that has no books. The little ones he's built on golf courses where his religious leaders bless it. And so that's problem one, is that our complete lack of realism and escalating unnecessarily with Russia, the greatest nuclear power in the world, contrary to what the president said. But the other is, it appears we're using Ukraine like we used the Cubans, like we used ex-Nazis after World War II, which is we recruited them in Operation Gladio to be left behind armies in Europe that led to all kinds of problems, robberies, terrorism, et cetera, in the decades that followed, the real precursors to Bandera's current regime, the Bandera-inspired regime in Ukraine. I mean, now they're literally promoting generals that have deep, deep, deep mob ties that everybody knows about in Ukraine. And then, look at where they're showing up. They're showing up in Iraq. Ukrainians are showing up in India. They're showing up in Africa. They're showing up. I mean, they claim credit for the Nord Stream attacks. There was a Ukraine connected individual that tried to assassinate the president in 2024 in Mar-a-Lago. So I'm concerned that they are using the way we use a lot of the Batista Cubans, like Felix Rodriguez, who shows up assassinating Che Guevara, shows up in the middle of Iran-Contra. How does this Cuban show up in the middle of all these things? We use them as our sort of deep state gray army, gray space army to do all kinds of terror events, human trafficking, money laundering, drug running, regime change operations, insurrections, civil wars, you name it. I'm afraid that the West, the MI6 and CIA boys, are now using Ukrainians in the same way to create a permanent terror army, not only to harass Russia, but to create false flags around the world, like may have been happening in Iraq. So that's going to be a consistent, persistent problem for decades to come.
Yeah, Iraqi authorities said there was definitely evidence of Ukrainian false flag attack plans in Iraq, here in this region. Operation Gladio, still not on the curricula of schools in the United States or in other NATO nations, I should probably add. But how does this feed into an Albanian island that Kushner and Ivanka Trump wanted to buy? Mass protests in the NATO country of Albania.
Well, it's like the billionaire's dream island, the oligarch dream island. because in case you induce nuclear war with your insanity, you've got a bunch of nuclear protected bunkers on that island. And if you need a new Epstein Island, and you know the Epstein Island's gone, so you got a bunch of bunkers to you know stash away all the sex slaves. And you're right across the border from the Albanian gangs that run the biggest human trafficking operation.
No proof yet that Kushner and Ivanka Trump have sex slaves, I should add.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I'm sure they're totally innocent. But it's like the perfect billionaire island, right? I mean, the oligarch island. You got both in one. I mean, who thought this was a brilliant idea? And then the from a PR perspective, to yip about this, that led to the Flamingo protest in Albania. But the other factor is the whole backstory is kind of weird. Like the way Ivanka Trump talked about it, like she was a character out of The Great Gatsby, that, you know, she just hopped off the yacht and swam over and just barefoot walked the island, said, "Oh, I must have it, honey." I mean, it's like, what, do these people have any sense of how they sound? And then Kushner admitting whose yacht it was in the middle of the Epstein file controversy and all the Trump problems and the Iran war and Kushner's involvement in connection to it, his getting fabulously rich off a lot of the deals he's doing connected to his father-in-law. He says, "Oh, by the way, we're hanging out on my friend Nathaniel Rothschild's boat." I was like, dude, these guys are like feeding into the conspiracy theories about them. By things that just, if a simulation wrote it, you would say it was bad AI. It was weird. It's too crazy to be true. And yet there it was in live time. And it just shows you the mindset. Their mindset is, we're going to get this. We're going to take Gaza, get rid of all the Palestinians, and just put up a bunch of Monaco-style resorts with big Trump signs up front. And then we're going to go get an island that sounds like an Epstein Island, that sounds like an evacuation in the case of nuclear apocalypse, live fallout, like the TV show and the comic series, Island. And we're going to talk about connections to the Rothschilds and the Israel lobby and the some of the money is coming
in. And really there. And Kushner is the one of the main West Asia negotiators in the United States. Just finally, I got to ask you, on a matter of law, does Trump have the authority to sacrifice U.S. soldiers' lives for all these wars that he's starting?
No, our founders were deeply concerned that any one person, no matter how conscientious they may be, that the experience of kings led them to believe that no one person can ever have the authority to get involved, to risk American lives in kinetic conflict. And that's why the right to declare war is exclusively given to Congress. And the Congress has never declared war in any of these conflicts, not in Venezuela, not in Iran, not in Ukraine. There's never been a constitutionally approved authority by Congress to risk any American lives. So every American life lost is an American life that was not only unnecessarily lost, but was unconstitutionally sacrificed at the altar of Trump's ego.
Robert Barnes, thank you.
Glad to be here.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to all those of you traumatized by today's NATO nation wars of aggression. We'll be back on Monday with one of the world's greatest trauma specialists, Holocaust survivor Dr. Gabor Maté. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not sense in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.